What is your favorite food? I think I can honestly say mine is bread. Now I'm craving my warm sourdough bread with some butter and salt on top. It's honestly the perfect thing to eat. But I'm also realistic, and I know for many of you out there, the carb feel might be real. It is too bad that carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. That's why Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They have remade carby empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, plus protein and fiber. And let me tell you, their products taste amazing. The other day, Dennis and Leah and I were making some grilled cheese sandwiches, and that would be a perfect place to swap in Hero Bread. I am very mindful when it comes to what my daughter eats, and I love that this bread helps you get enough fiber and adds more protein to your diet while cutting down on the sugar. Hero Bread is not only delicious and flavorful, there's something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code YOGAGIRL at checkout. That's YOGAGIRL at hero.co. From the Heart is brought to you by Oatly. For totally true facts about oat milk, just go to oatly.com. That's OATLY.com. Hi, and welcome to another episode of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. I have the sweetest guest of all time sitting with me here right now today that I am so happy to introduce, Stephanie Birch. Steph is a writer, a yoga teacher, photographer, play-at-home mom. I love that expression. I've never heard it before, but I love it. And a good friend of mine. Also, she's one of our beautiful teachers on 108.com. Welcome to the show, Steph.
Thank you for having me.
Notes that we just did this introduction, and then I realized my podcast recorder device was fucked. So here we are. We got like a little practice run.
I feel less nervous now.
Okay, good. You're like, we did the first minute once before. Like, here we go. I'm so excited that you're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
People ask all the time, like, when are you going to have Steffi now on the show? And you're far away in Sacramento and I'm in Aruba. And
now here we are.
Now here we are.
After the retreat.
After the retreat. Yeah. Stephanie and I just hosted a retreat together called Authentically You. How did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. I was thinking about it this morning and I was looking at all the girls' pictures on Facebook and I was starting to get teary-eyed. I'm like, it's already over.
It was weird. Time-wise.
Time warp.
I mean, time warp, like totally. Even the last class I taught, like right before our closing circle, I was like, hey, everybody, close your eyes, lie on the floor. I'm like, so here we are, our first class together. And I was like, wait, our last class, like what the hell?
That's
because
how it
felt like we were just about to begin and then it was over.
And it was over.
I know, sweetest group, sweetest group.
Every single one of those ladies is amazing and I just want to bring them all home.
I know. Oh. I know. And it's so beautiful. And for me, this is the first retreat I have ever, I mean, aside from like with Dennis, we used to co-lead retreats together, which was hilarious and hard. Really hard, but really amazing. But it's the first time that I've co-led a retreat ever.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Oh my God. It was so good. So good. I think for me, I mean, and I've shared this on the podcast before, but all the retreats and groups I have this year are in some shape or form in collaboration with other people. It was like last year for me was a big year of I've been doing everything alone. Everything I do is like I do it alone. And it's also a source of this sometimes this struggle between me and Dennis because it frustrates me that he can delegate everything he does. He can like call in sick and someone else will do all the stuff he has to do that day.
Right.
Like normal people have that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I cannot delegate 1% of the things that I do. Like, honestly, what I can delegate, I have delegated. But everything that's left, which is like teaching or retreats, teacher trainings, podcasts, like writing.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell anybody else to do that.
You're like, somebody be Rachel today.
can someone clone me and like take over for a moment? Like, but so my solution to feeling really overwhelmed and overworked last year was, and it came like a light bulb of like, wait, like I'm surrounded by so many amazing people, you know, who teach or who also it's not just about teaching. Like, it doesn't even have to be a yoga teacher, but like who have the same vibration as I and who want to share similar things. Like, why not just invite them and help hold the space? And it was like, what's wrong with me that I never thought of that in my life? Like, that was an option, you know?
Now here we are.
And now here we are. And it was so, for me, it was so beautiful.
It was so easy. Well, people go, how did you plan it? And I said,
we didn't.
That's like the worst.
We didn't. In our teacher trainings, I have to tell my students all the time, like, you know, and you want to plan out your classes. I never plan out mine, but you really should plan yours. Like,
totally.
We had like one 15-minute session before the retreat. So like, where we basically said, okay, so let's go with the flow. That's the plan. Okay, cool.
And that's what we did.
And that's what we did.
And it flowed. And it just went. I was like, yeah, her saying that in class or her teaching, I was like, gosh, we're so similar. And I forget. But also like so different too at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's just like a beautiful blend of just two women coming together and with other 45 women.
It was so good.
It was amazing.
It was so good and easy. That's the key word. And I'm a little sick right now. I mean, I feel sick of talking on the show about the fact that I'm sick, because every month at least I've had some sort of sickness. And right now I have this, I don't know what it is, something. But then normally when I have that, if I'm going into a retreat or a training, it comes with this panic of like, oh, I have such a big responsibility. And what if I can't carry that? Or what if I'm going to fail?
Yeah.
And now because you were there, everything was so, actually didn't bother me that I was sick at all. It was like really
so
chill.
Good.
I mean, I was there the same amount of time I would spend with a normal group.
Yeah.
Like present for everything. But it was that feeling of just softening, like, oh, but she's got this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
So yummy. So for anyone who like doesn't know you, I can't believe I said like doesn't know you. For anyone who doesn't know you, who's Steph?
Who is Steph?
Hard question.
Such a big question. Gosh, sometimes I'll just say the one with many hats. Being a woman, a mom, a yoga teacher, writer, photographer, all the hats, but all the hats are such doing things.
Hmm.
And they all make up who I am. And I don't know. I think I'm just a woman that's constantly in evolution, seeking growth, and always looking to create from the inside out.
What a beautiful way to say it. And it's hard. I mean, sometimes I think labels are really hard.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's good to have some for like, hey, this is what I do. Like, what's up? But I think the type of work that we do is kind of hard to explain.
Yeah,
I don't love even the box of I teach yoga. You know?
Yeah, same.
I don't like it anymore.
I weave in and out. I'm like, oh, what do I do? Who am I? All kinds of things.
All kinds of things.
And then just a human being.
Mm-hmm. But we met years and years ago. I mean, we connected through social media for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you were one of the few people. And I mean, now I think it's very evident why. But I think back then, I mean, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I don't know, when we connected for the first time. Now I can really see, oh, okay, I know there's a certain type of online personality that I really don't agree with.
Yeah.
And I've been able to kind of make that distinction. And I think specifically within the yoga community online, there's been that kind of, oh, okay, there's people who do things this way and there's people who do things that way. And back then, I didn't really have that thinking. Everyone was just kind of figuring out what it was and to teach yoga and put that online and influence or inspire people online. Like, it was such a new concept. So, but you were one of the few people where I was like, ooh, her, like, I want to meet her in person. Like, I want to take her class. I want her to like come teach with me over here. You know, I had that immediate feeling, and now it's so evident to see.
It is. Yeah. And I, even all those years ago when I initially sent you that email of just thanking you and how you inspire me and make me feel like I can be me and still teach yoga. I said, someday I'm going to go to Aruba and I'm going to meet her. I didn't know how. I didn't know like what that looked like. And you actually came to California first.
Yeah.
And that's how we met.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was so funny.
And then
I like knew like Steffi lives around here.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We gotta go.
We're texting.
I know. So fun. And I mean, both me and Dennis, especially like during those first years, we had so many encounters from the online world. Like, we'd go teach in LA and then all of a sudden, oh, but that person that I like comments on my post or that I sometimes chat with online, like they live there. Oh, we should meet them.
Yeah.
And we've had definite like mega awkward meets with like social media influencers or even like celebrities or people who are like, oh, they gotta be like the coolest person. And then we're there at dinner and it's like, oh my God, we have nothing in common.
How are we gonna get out of this? Like, holy shit.
But then there's been some where it's been like, oh, this is like, we know each other forever already. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the easiest thing. And you're definitely one of those people.
Yeah. You are too. It was so easy just to have dinner with you guys, that first one in Napa.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I was like, don't be introverted and weird. And I don't know if I was.
No.
Maybe I didn't.
No.
But in my head, I was like sweating at dinner, like, I'm going to drink a beer.
I'm going to drink a beer and speak words.
Speak words.
Yeah. But let's talk about that. You are an introvert.
Mm-hmm. See?
And here's a manifestation of what that's like.
Yeah. So I have to really push myself to speak, to connect, to get closer to people instead of just be the listener or off to the side. Or one of the coolest things and the biggest reasons for me even teaching yoga is to push myself to be in front and with people and speak and be vulnerable. It's really easy for me to write. It's really easy for me to photograph people. Because I'm not in the equation, really. I am when I write, but not, like, it takes me out of it, and I can just push other people to the front. Hmm. I'm really good at that.
Did you have that when you were growing up, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the oldest of five, so always the responsible one, always the leader, the caretaker, set a really good example, and that type of conditioning, whether my parents knew it or not, has just this, just be quiet. Don't speak unless you're spoken to. Set the example. Take care of everyone else. And sometimes I take a back seat in my own life.
Hmm.
I'm like, damn it.
But I mean, isn't it? And it's so interesting because now it's like your whole life path somehow is storytelling and speaking in front of people. And I mean, I'm just teaching yoga. I mean, it's, people don't usually think about that, especially if you haven't taught or if you're just used to taking classes. But I mean, teaching a yoga class, it's public speaking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 100%.
And public speaking, you are yourself. It's not just a speech, unless you teach Bikram. You know?
Yeah.
But just... it's you being yourself in front of people.
Hmm.
And I'm very like, don't be messy. Ugh. Like, you have it all together. That's not true.
No, it's true.
Now I need to show people my messiness more. Mm-hmm. It's easy to write the messy, but now, like, especially in the last year, I've been working on connecting with people, bringing people together for... Write Club has been one of my most favorite things to do, to be in person and not necessarily share my writing online. I want to be able to express my voice
and speaking it instead of just looking eye to eye,
all the eye contact we do at the retreat.
It's so
beautiful
and so different. I think there's definite levels of. I mean, levels of being an extrovert, too, or levels of allowing yourself to be seen in that way. And sometimes you can kind of mistake the idea of, I mean, because you have an Instagram platform with lots of followers, and I have an Instagram platform with lots of followers, and then we talk to them. And it might look like on the outside, like, ooh, they're so brave. It's, you know, being vulnerable with these people and sharing all this truth. But you're not sitting there with those thousands or millions of people. You know, they're not... looking at you in that moment. They're not seeing you fully. You're sharing this version of something. And being in the room or looking one person in the eye sharing that same thing can be super hard or impossible.
When we're feeling each other, we're making eye contact in America, everybody's head down, like, you don't exist. I don't exist. Like, let's just do our 9-to-5. Don't look at me.
I mean, I think all over the world, kind of.
Yeah.
I feel like Americans are more outgoing. I mean, I'm Scandinavian. We are a very cold, like, temperature in terms of, you know, it's cold outside, which kind of makes people a little boxed in, and spending half of the year inside, literally, like sure. in our houses, like, you know, makes people really closed off and kind of, yeah. and once you get a Swedish person to open up, it's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like Americans still have this kind of like, I'm great. Mm. You know, this like America.
Well, and I go, ooh, let's not. Sometimes while traveling, I'm like, ooh, I don't want to admit I'm American sometimes. Like, I don't represent the loud, like, I'm amazing. I deserve. And, you know, the, that, whatever that is, that stereotype. And
I mean, there's good and bad to everything. Yeah. But I think, but how has it changed your life, you know, telling your story, or that practice of standing up and speaking and taking up space, even though you have that voice inside that tells you no? Mm.
I think it just makes me a better human and more empathetic to others. When I struggle with people or relationships that are maybe a little bit more challenging, or in business or personal friendships, I feel like I can step back and pause and see that person as who they are, and know that, gosh, I struggle with all these things. I grew up this way. My experience has brought me here, and their experience has brought them there. And I can see them, and like, even when it's like a harsh criticism towards me or something, or they don't agree with me, I just go, they're human, just like me. I have my own biases, my own opinions too, because I have these experiences that led me to all that.
Hmm.
And
it's more forgiving.
Yeah. But, I think I'm really good at forgiving. I'm really good at also setting boundaries, but I'm also, I always have hope that people can change or will change. And so I'm able to forgive easily. Not that I forget per se, but.
And is that from practice too, or was that always easy for you?
I don't know. I think just I have a relationship with my biological dad that he's been in and out of my life, and it's because I've set boundaries and I have forgiven what was and always had allowed him back into my life. And even at like a young age, in my teenager self, my 20-year-old self, it just, I don't know, I just always hope that people, I have hope and faith in people.
That they're going to do better.
Yeah.
And that's even a beautiful, if we never, quality. I mean, yeah. And you can forgive and still keep that quality. You know, sure. You can set boundaries and still keep that quality.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I feel like that was kind of a big theme on the retreat that we just had, was setting boundaries. There was a common thread. And I mean, and I have it in my life, and you have it in your past and in your life. But especially as women, I feel like men are kind of conditioned throughout their lives in a different way of like being strong, mm-hmm. or being firm, or, you know, kind mm-hmm. of, this is mine and this is yours and I'm doing it this way and my way or the highway. And as women, we're like, okay, but that's okay if that's what you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Also in the workplace and kind of, yeah, taking more of a backseat role, which I feel, of course, it's changing a lot now. But how has that been? How has that process been for you in terms of setting boundaries? What brought you to a place where you felt like, oh, okay, I need a boundary here?
It's like, it feels a bit like a betrayal of self if I don't set a boundary. So if I get really angry, that's how I know I have not set a boundary for this person or this situation or relationship. And it could be something that they did, or something that I feel like either was misleading or whatever kind of mistreatment. If I don't set a boundary, I get angry. And that's how I know. It's that emotion.
And is that rare for you, anger?
Yeah. Yeah. Or it takes a lot for me to get really angry. But at the end of the day, I know when I'm angry, it's just because I'm really hurt or really sad. Mm. And it's not that I want to avoid sadness or avoid hurt or pain. I used to be explosive with my anger in my 20s, like physically, like freak out, get in my car, rip around the freeway and like express it. Like, I didn't know how to like reflect on why I was angry, or I was just like an outburst and I couldn't contain it. And now I think with yoga and becoming a mom, that like puts me in check easily. So now I can like see myself, let myself be angry, but also leave room for pause to reflect. And at the root, it's just hurt.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, always.
Always.
But it doesn't mean that anger isn't valid, or, you know, that it's not, that we should do nothing about it or repress it or go the other way. And I think that's so common. And that was also kind of, I mean, it's a theme of life, is something I talk about a lot, but learning how to, in a healthy way, express anger. And we're not taught that.
No.
I feel like there should be, I mean, already now, like Lea Luna's two, I'm like, we're, now she needs to learn. Like, now we need to start giving her tools for when I'm really angry, like, what are some things I can do to, like, to hold that space, to let it out, to get that energy flowing through so the moment can pass.
And let her without feel her, safe.
Yeah, and feeling safe without her hurting herself or hurting me or, you know, doing anything that isn't healthy long term, or suppressing it, saying, no, you know, quiet down, or that's not okay. We don't do that in this house, or, or whatever. And it's like the most important thing.
Yeah. Like dynamic meditation. Like
dynamic meditation. So, yeah. That was your first dynamic, right?
It was my first dynamic, but I've done things similar to have similar experiences. But dynamic is, I think, I don't want to say everyone should do it, but everyone should do it.
Everyone should do it.
Yeah. And I yeah, and I've also participated in long stretches of seated meditation. So no movement, no breath work, sitting in stillness for long periods of time. And the differences in what brings out, like, dynamic brought out such a good release. And I was crying, laughing, little hints of anger, but I don't really know. I was just letting myself release what was in there. But seated meditation, oh, that like makes me feel my anger.
Because like, can be suffocating. God. It can be, I think I feel the
same. Differences.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's healthy to have both. And I think the more we do of the active release, the easier it's going to be to sit in silence and not have all that stuff kind of in the way or bubble up, or they're both ways to process.
Yeah.
You know, just different. But I think boundaries, and it's something I feel like we get a lot of questions about in this podcast also. It's once you start setting boundaries in your life, because I feel like we can go a long time without actually realizing that we need a boundary in a certain relationship. And a pattern that I see a lot is a boundary between us and our parents. And I mean, there's going to get to a point where our kids, where Bennett and Looney's, where they're going to be like, okay, mom, I need some space here. Like, here's a boundary. I know. Oh, let's cry about that.
Okay.
Is that okay? Fine. Oh my god, I could actually cry.
I could actually cry because even like what Bennett said on the phone, and I just
share that. So Bennett's seven.
Bennett is seven, and he's the sweetest. He's a Cancer, so he's really sensitive. Really is in touch with his feelings, his emotions, and doesn't hide any of that. And we don't hide it either. We just let him out. But just the other night, like 2 days before the retreat ends, he's like, when are you coming home? Like, just crocodile tears. Mm. And he goes, I don't think yoga retreats should exist. They should never exist. And I was like,
oh. It's the cutest thing. Like,
I mean, I'm like tearing up right now, but hear you, buddy.
Yeah.
Because they should only exist if I can come.
Oh, well, maybe there's some truth to that.
I know.
You're like, and sometimes mommy needs to be alone.
I know.
I mean, both of it is true.
And that's just
the hard thing about motherhood, is that everything is true at the same time.
It is.
We want to have space and be alone, but we also want to be with them 24 hours a day.
Right.
Like,
I'm like, it's really the best, worst thing ever.
Yeah, best, worst thing ever. It's the hardest and the easiest, and like brings up all this stuff. But I mean, there's going to be a point, no matter how well we do at this parenting stuff, no matter if we like tick all the boxes and try our hardest and, you know, do everything quote unquote right, there is always going to be that moment where they have to grow into themselves.
Sure.
As their own person. And it's not always going to align with what we feel or what we think should be or what we think they, you know, they are. So I think everyone has to kind of in their lives at some point arrive at that place of setting a boundary, whether it's gentle and soft from a place of love or whether it's from like, I can't live with you. You know, maybe there's stuff there in the back that's been really, really, or in the past that's been really, really hard. And for me, and I've shared this on the pod too, I've had a past or a childhood of no boundaries at all, of kind of feeling at times I'm almost merged into one person with my mom and with my dad. Like he was kind of, I don't want to say he's an angry guy, but he definitely did not get the tools when he grew up in terms of how to deal with sadness or pain or loss. And it shows up as anger in him.
Yeah.
Like really intensely out of the blue, like clear sky, sunny day. And all of a sudden there's a tornado there. Like it can be really scary.
I have similar.
You have?
Yeah.
You know, so I thought for a long time, like that's just normal. Like that's what dads are. And this is what moms are. And mom's sad a lot. And I'm the one who takes care of her. And dad's angry. And I'm the one who like talks him down or, you know.
Yeah.
And no, that's not healthy. Like, no. And they tried their best. And I mean, really, and they were great parents in so many ways. But there was that space of like, my mom would have never in a million years realized that I needed to set a boundary there. It's not going to come from her.
Right.
You know, it came from me. And it came from this moment of, oh, I can't continue this way because I can't live the best life for me. Can't focus on myself if I allow her to take up this much space in my life. It's like I'm in the backseat and she's driving the car, but it's my car.
Yeah.
That was kind of it. And it was so painful, you know, that realization. It came with so much fear and like, what if I set a boundary? Because I also love her and she's the most important person for me. And what if I set that boundary and I break her heart? Or what if I set that boundary and she doesn't want to be with me? And it was so much of this like total, almost absorbing.
You don't want to disappoint.
Ugh, it's the hardest
thing. That's the other thing. I'm a people pleaser too. Like, I don't want to disappoint you. I want to be there for you.
Yeah. But I mean, and of course, it's going to be a disappointment. It's going to be painful setting any kind of boundary, whether it's just, okay, like maybe we shouldn't talk 20 times a day, or maybe we should have a month and not in a little bit of space.
Yeah.
Anything between parents and children, it's going to hurt.
Totally.
Totally. I can't imagine that from Looney's. Like, it's just, but I hope she gets to that point one day because it's a healthy thing to do.
I just go, I know I'm fucking it up. He's going to have to deal with whatever we bring to him.
Yeah.
And I fully trust and know in my heart, my parents did the best they could with what they knew. And same, we're all just doing our very best with the way we know how.
And isn't that so, such an important part about becoming a parent is also realizing that, oh, it's not as easy as I thought, you know?
Like, oh, couldn't they just have done better? I was such a good parent when I didn't have kids.
Yes. Me too. I'm like, can all these people just take better care of their fucking kids?
Yeah.
And then, okay, it's actually like all consuming and almost impossible to get this right.
I mean,
either way, there's going to be moments where, you know, and there's, I mean, it's totally true. Like, you can love your kids so much that you suffocate them. Like, there's too much love there. I need freedom. I need space. And then they're going to have to work with that when they grow older. And I think it's part of just our evolution of our consciousness is going to be to fuck our kids up our way, the way we only can, only us could ever do, so that they have something to deal with.
Totally. Right?
So that they can have their own.
Well, they need the struggle. They need, they need the disappointment of their parents too. Like, I think it's healthy for me to disappoint Bennett. Not on purpose, like, ooh, I'm going to do this to him today.
Today I'm going to disappoint my son.
No, but just when I think about, like, there have been two times I've forgotten to pick him up at school. Just mom brain. And I've been late. And the first time it was very, like, oh, traumatic. Like, I felt awful. I freaked out. He freaked out. I mean, he's just in the office.
What I mean.
He's safe. He's fine. Yeah. But that was a good lesson where I said, I'm going to disappoint him more. Not like consciously, but this is going to happen. And I make mistakes. I'm human. I can apologize for mistake or for hurting him unintentionally.
And how beautiful. I mean, it, like, really is.
Even though it's fucking hard. Like, oh, I don't want to forget him at school, though.
No. But I mean, sort of that kind of expectation. Because there are things that are going to be out of our control.
You know?
And we are just human and we do the best we can with what we have.
Yeah.
Just the way our parents did.
Yeah.
So I think it's such a healthy realization to have that, okay, even those maybe most fucked up moments where I resented my parents for a long time or where I was angry at them for a long time, even in those moments, that was the best they could do. Like if any parent, if I could have done better, I would have done better.
Yeah. You and know? It helps us to soften.
Mm-hmm. And forgive.
Yeah, forgive. Mm. We see each other. Like I see myself, I see my mom now. Like I'll be 36 this month. I see my mom now at my age than I think I ever have growing up. Like I always pushed her away, pushed her away, pushed her away. Especially I think moms and young women, that relationship can be such a struggle. The I don't know what that is, but yeah. So I have like so much softness and ease and grace, and it's not always perfect, but right now I feel very like leaned into the grace of like women in general. And like I talk about holy womanhood and write about holy womanhood, and I think I want just more women around me, or not necessarily day to day, but like I want to bring all the women to the front and all together, like the right clubs that by accident were all, it's all women. They're the best. Sorry, dudes, not sorry, but they're the best. They feel the most cathartic and healing and just coming together in sisterhood.
Tell me about Right Club.
Well, we meet once a month in Sacramento, and just like during the retreat, guided prompts in different ways. Sometimes they're the same, but I wanted to create a monthly, I don't want to call it a series, but something consistent that had certainty so people can join and know that it's coming every single month, and they can just write and release and let go or work through their own shit, whatever they needed to do. And it didn't feel right to just do it quarterly or once a year, especially on a local level. And it's really important for me to just hold space and also share my story and why I write and what it's done for me in my life, and have others, you know, explore within either the same or different, or have their own experience with it.
How did you start journaling? How did you start writing? Was that always,
always
a part of your life?
Always. I've been journaling since I was little, and teenager, young 20s, I would just write in my notebooks. Didn't matter if the paper, if I had no paper, I'd write on something on the back of a receipt because I just needed to get it out. And it was one of the quiet ways I express myself loudly.
Oh, what a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
And now that's expanded to something, because there's also an online piece of it.
So now Write Club sending...
It's the best name.
I mean, well, it's the best name. A Write Club, like a fight club for people that want to write. It's just...
You don't talk about Write Club.
You don't talk about it. You don't know about it unless you know... No. And now I just, whomever is subscribed to my email list, they'll get a weekly prompt. If they're not local to Sacramento, they can join. And I typically write a story or an experience. Sometimes it's like a little ranty. And then I write I come up with a prompt out of what I've written.
And every week?
Every week, every Wednesday. Sometimes I'll create a yoga video and do a prompt after and just put it up on the YouTube. And just link them to the video or have them listen to something. It's not the same on
of
a
course not,
it's
yeah.
just not. Just like
not
retreat.
Being in person. Yeah.
It's not the same.
But I mean, it's also part of, it's a privilege to be able to gather in that sense. You know, especially retreats like this, we have to fly somewhere.
Yeah.
And kind of, it's a big thing to put together. And if you're living in the local area that you can come once a month, like that's a more accessible thing.
Yeah.
But I think to give people tools just to have in their everyday is a really valuable thing. It's not going to be the same in terms of we're not looking each other in the eye, crying, sharing what we wrote or sharing our story, but as close as you can get to that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's free.
And it's free. I will always want it to be accessible for anyone. And whether they write or not, maybe they just need to read and think about something. Mm. And I don't know where it goes, how it lands, but it's out there, and I just trust that it's meant to be.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
Now, I love my daughter. Everybody knows that. But around 7 o'clock every night when I put her to bed, my alone time with Dennis begins. And it's also some of my favorite parts of the day. One of our favorite things to do at night is make super delicious vegan food for dinner. It's kind of crazy to say, but Dennis is becoming a master vegan chef. He's gone from eating all sorts of crazy stuff to suddenly loving vegan food, and he loves to cook it every day. I don't even know where he gets most of his creative ideas from anymore. Well, last night we decided to keep it super simple, and we made vegan pizza using Bob's Red Mill unbleached artisan bread flour. It's our favorite premium high-protein flour milled from America's highest quality wheat. Dennis and I love making pizza so much that we even decided to buy a classic wood stove for the backyard. It's kind of getting a little bit out of control. There's no need to even change the recipe at all. The ingredients we use are perfect, and Bob's Red Mill makes sure of that. On top of the flour, we add herbs and garlic and olive oil to make the perfect dough each time. And Dennis rolls and I chop the ingredients. My pizza is usually topped off with all different kinds of veggies like olives, tomatoes, mushrooms, and Dennis is more of a vegan meat lover and he tops his with vegan sausage. And of course, tons of vegan cheese. There's nothing quite like ending the day with delicious food that's good for you, and nothing like ending the day with my husband as well. If you want to learn more about the awesome brand that my whole family loves and lives by, you can check out Bob's Red Mill products and recipes. Go to bobsredmill.com. Easy peasy, go to bobsredmill.com.
When we moved from Aruba to Sweden, we weren't really sure what to do with our home in Aruba. We didn't want to sell the space that had so many memories and offered us a place to stay when we returned to the island. But what else could we do after moving internationally? That's when my husband came up with a brilliant plan. We can become hosts on Airbnb. Since starting this, I can officially say my husband had the best idea ever. The process of getting our property on Airbnb was so easy. We were able to ask other hosts for tips and got a lot of great feedback. And actually, we still get tons of good feedback and we're constantly improving our space. And Airbnb is really flexible. You just choose the dates you want to host. So if you don't have a full-time rental property like us, that's perfect too. Hosting on Airbnb is great for anyone who frequently travels or has the extra space or has a seasonal house or even someone who always goes away at the same time of year for family traditions or work events. We all know the cost of living is excessive right now, so you can get more out of your space when you host on Airbnb. The added income has been so important for my family and has given my husband a project to manage that he genuinely enjoys. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we're going to do some more writing and fun stuff with you on yogagirl.com too. That's the plan. So if you guys, if you're listening and you're like, ooh, I want to dive deeper, I'll be sharing some more of Steph's stuff also coming soon. But when we were doing the writing this week, because I write a lot and I never write, very rarely write in an actual journal. Like I'm more, if I'm in the moment and I feel something, I'll open the notes app on my phone and I'll write and write and write and write and write. And then sometimes, rarely, but sometimes I'll be like, ooh, okay, I'm going to share this. And then I always, because it's like five times too long for an Instagram caption, I have to abbreviate it and then put it in. And one of the first prompts or one of the first circles we had, you shared, well, of course, like writing, it's a very physical act and you're using your hands and it's less disconnected than being on your phone, which is so true. And the first prompt you gave us was 100 things about myself, where you just write, you know, list, bullet point, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, until 100 things that are true, things about me. And the first thing I wrote, my name is Rachel. And then number two, I have shit handwriting. That was my number two. And then my number three became, actually, I don't have shit handwriting. I just want to do everything quickly. And it's true. When I sit down and I'm like, if I'm like signing someone's book and writing a little dedication, like I can do that really nicely. Yeah. But I'm not a slow, patient person. Yeah. If I'm journaling, I'm like, I want to get it. I want to fill this page right away. Or like, my brain moves too quickly for my hand to catch up.
Yeah. And we can type faster than write. So the writing forces us to slow down.
No, I mean, and it's been it was a good practice for me to have. Also, another prompt we did about complaints. Do you want to share that one in case anyone wants to do
it? That one is my favorite.
I loved it.
It's, well, now I just keep doing it in my own life, but complaints. When we have something to complain about, it's, in other words, what I like to, how I like to think of it is that it's just an unmet need. So I write down what my complaint is. For example, when Steve doesn't do the dishes.
Yeah.
I'm like, motherfucker, do the dishes. I'm not your maid. No. And it's really an unmet need. Like, what do I need here? Is it really about just the few dishes he put in on one day? Or is it, actually, I would like some help or support. Mm-hmm. Or maybe for him to ask me to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes I feel like I need to be validated by him just asking, hey, babe, I gotta go. I love you. Gotta go to work. Will you do the dishes?
Yeah. For me? And then you're like, and happy to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I know. So it's just the reflecting of that really has helped me to shift when I need to complain about something.
Mm-hmm,
Is it a need? Is it a want? Do I need to reflect on it? And then if I think about it, is it true? Or am I taking it too personally?
But even just putting something as simple as that, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm so annoyed when Dennis doesn't do the fucking dishes. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the prompt, so what we did was writing that your top three most annoying things, mm-hmm. whatever comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, there's so much. How do I choose just three? But then looking at them and then looking at, okay, is there actually an unmet need or want here? And what does it actually represent? And for me, the number one I put, because this is my like biggest pet, like peeve, like the thing that annoys me the most is yeah. sloppiness.
Yeah.
And I know I can be really harsh on people in that way. And I'm a super perfectionist, like, and very judgmental toward myself to do everything really meticulous mm-hmm. and right. And I think I'm the hardest on myself, you know, harder on myself than anybody else. But just sloppiness all around. Like, if someone's going to write me an email, like, just, like, punctuation. Yes. Come on. So, you know, I get a lot of these, and I know you do too, but a lot of these companies who reach out who are like, oh, if you want to be the new brand ambassador for this or whatever, and you know it's a copy-paste.
Let me insert my eye roll here.
Yeah, insert eye roll. Like, and then, you know, it's a copy-pasted email, and they're just sending it to, like, lists of people, and yes. all they do is change the name.
Yes.
But then they don't even fuck up the name change.
Yeah, they don't even spell it right. No,
then I'll write them back. I'm like, hello, actually, my name is not Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Rachel. If you would have taken the time to mm-hmm. like actually get to know me, maybe mm-hmm. I would have been interested. But because right. of this sloppy fucking bullshit yeah. email, no, like, go away.
Yeah.
Okay, I won't write it like that. But I'll be like, this is so, you know, if you're going to do something, like, just take a second with it. Like, do it.
Do right. you really respect my work?
Do
or
you
do
really?
You just need me?
You just want like
want.
Marketing, right. you know, and it's just, yeah. But then when I wrote that, like, sloppiness, and it also goes with, you know, service at restaurants, like, and I'm okay with that if it's like a sweet person and they forget something, that doesn't matter. But
sure.
if you're like, throw the menu in my face
oh.
or like, you know, like just the sloppiness yeah. of like not caring
yeah.
about what you do.
Yeah.
That annoys me. And then we had to kind of reflect over, okay, so is there an unmet want or a need here, an unmet need. And I was like, the fact that I'm annoyed by the whole world being sloppy. It's not just like Dennis is sloppy sometimes, because that's not the thing. It's like yeah. the whole world.
The whole world.
What is the solution? Like, what is the unmet need? And I wrote, I need everyone to do a perfect job at everything at all times. And that was my unmet need. And then, of course, I got to reflect on that. I was like, maybe, Rachel, you need to practice a little bit of letting go. Maybe there is a little...
Just a hint
of letting go, rather than everybody else do their jobs perfect all the time. But it was such a fun... It was a fun practice just to see myself like, oh, what's the response here?
Yeah.
But then there was another one where, okay, and something that annoys me is when the baby's sleeping, people who aren't quiet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so what is the unmet need? It's like, well, I need peace of mind. Like,
yes.
I need people to be quiet when she's asleep. And it's not just, you know, for her to sleep long, just so I can have peace of mind.
Yeah.
Like, she gets her rest and I get my rest, because my need is I need to rest.
Yeah.
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 So that's like a real thing.
It
so when
is.
I'm annoyed at, like, I don't know, Dennis who like slams the door, you know, it's like, hey, baby wakes up now. Like, that means that I
right.
am on again.
Right.
You know,
right.
and I need help, or I need yeah. support, or I need a break. So it was, anyone, if you're listening now and you're like, ooh, this sounds cool, Just write down your top three things that annoy you the most and then reflect on. Mm-hmm. Is there an unmet need there? Or is there something that you can reflect on, like that complaint actually represents something mm-hmm. different, like a need to let go?
Yeah, or ask for help. Hmm. Like, we can ask people in our lives for help. Like, can you take Bennett to school this morning? I've been very good about that, whereas I'm not always good at speaking up for myself or asking for help. I'm like, I gotta do everything on my own. I gotta set the example. I don't need help. And I want it my way too.
Why are we like that though? What do you think? Because it's not just you and me.
Control, or just, I think it's also tied to my feeling enough. Like, it, like me being enough as a person is a part of doing enough. Like, if I ask for help, that means I'm not good enough. So that can tie into, like, my own self-esteem and, like, root chakra work that I need to do.
And then we open that door and then, like, it's kind of life-changing.
Yeah. And we're like, shit, now that I know that, I have to be responsible for that.
But I feel like some people just are naturally good at that. And then if it's not in your kind of DNA to ask for help and support, it's this thing you have to practice all the time.
Totally.
And I'll do it. And actually, I'm super blessed that I have this amazing team that I work with. I mean, I'm so blessed in so many ways, but specifically, like, they know that about me and that I tend to, if I don't say anything for a long time, that usually means I'm very overwhelmed and, like, super, you know, hardly can manage. So there's at least one or two people who every morning is like, hey, do you need something today?
Yeah.
And I can just, and that forces me to just sit back and be, and it can be anything. It can be like, oh, yeah, actually, I don't know how I'm going to pick up the baby, because I have this meeting here and there. And it's like, okay, well, let's change that meeting. Like,
yeah.
Let's cancel that. And then they give me permission to do that, even though I'm the quote-unquote boss.
Yeah.
Like, can we just change that? Okay, cool. Okay.
Like, no, giving each other permission.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you can have anyone in your life just be that person and check in with each other all the time.
Yeah.
Like, what do you need?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's an actual thing. Okay, I need you to help me with this. Sometimes it's just like, oh, today I need to rest more. Or today I need to move my body. You know, we can do that alone too. And I think writing in that sense can be so, so beautiful, because you don't need anybody else.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the girls at the retreat were like, it's so different seeing these words on paper. Mm.
It is.
Writing out some of the deeper stuff that we went into is... Oh, these things are what I say to myself. It's hard to read that.
It's confronting.
It really is. It's so 100%. Confrontational.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
Since well-being is something we talk about every week on this show, the people at Oatly asked me to talk a little bit about climate change this week too. Because of course, when you think about it, climate change is an issue at the center of everyone's well-being. And as we all know, it's a topic that can feel overwhelming. Maybe because we feel like we're just waiting for the politicians to create laws to slow down the planet's current progression toward being uninhabitable. See, okay, I've already talked about climate change for like 20 seconds and I'm already feeling overwhelmed. But don't worry, there's still good news. Us non-politicians do have the power to make a difference right now. It might sound cliche, but small changes do add up. Things like being thoughtful about how we get from one place to another, or if you're not ready to go totally vegan, try switching from cow's milk to plant-based milk. I mean, the fact that we no longer need an animal to make something to put on our cereal or in our coffee is really, really good news. And since we're in the middle of an ad for Oatly, it seems like the perfect time to mention that oat milk tastes really good on your cereal or in your coffee, uses a lot less water, less land, and creates far less greenhouse gas emissions than cow's milk does. So if you're a non-politician like me, or a politician who occasionally doubles as a regular human being, and you want to do something now about having a planet to live on in the future, maybe think about switching over to Oatly. Or at least find out more about Oatly, the vegan plant-based oat milk originally from Sweden, at oatly.com. That's OATLY.com. Or look for Oatly on Instagram at OATLY. I feel inspired from this week because I always do writing in my retreats, but it's always in connection with practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start a practice with a very simple prompt about anything, letting go or forgiveness or how am I feeling or just something, just as a way in.
Mm-hmm.
I like how writing opens the door just to that reflection of, And then I find once we start moving, I can touch on that and they're already open because they kind of went into their story already. But I feel inspired by you just to get other people to really sit with themselves in that way, way more. Because I don't, you know, I really don't. I don't have that practice of just me and, you know, I'm too intense. I'm too extroverted. I'm like, I'd rather sit and talk to a million people on the podcast about my problem. Yeah. Why should I have a diary?
Yeah, but all the sharing circles that you led were so beautiful. And getting us to share one-on-one, small group to big group.
Yeah, like, I love that. Yeah. I love that. But it also does. I mean, and it requires another level of vulnerability.
Yes.
Kind of the writing, it's just you and your own thoughts or you and your own feelings. And that's such a, and it works so well with the yoga too.
It does. Like, it's all connected.
It's all connected. It's just this perfect mix of everything. But I know for you, I mean, how, because you have a history of, like, you always love to move. Mm-hmm. You're a very movement oriented person, but you're not, yoga hasn't been a part of your life forever, always.
No.
How did you make your way to that practice?
Well, over 10 years ago, I took my first yoga class because a friend of mine promised to buy me a beer after.
That's a great way. Anyone listening, like, if you have that friend who, like, I don't want to do yoga, like, go buy them a beer. See if it works.
And I said, I don't want to do that weird hippie breathing thing. And yeah, I was served a big slice of humble pie. That first yoga class was a power vinyasa, heated. I didn't know I could sweat like off of my nose and my fingertips. And I was like, what the hell is this? And so I practiced off and on. I really enjoyed it. And then I got pregnant. And actually, Steve and I used to go on yoga dates when we were first dating. And I was like, this guy does yoga? Okay.
What a man.
Yeah.
He requires like his own podcast. He needs to be. Too much to say about him. Yeah.
Even getting questions about him. And I got pregnant with Bennett. I didn't practice yoga when I was pregnant. I just liked to walk. I just wanted to walk and walk and walk. I had him. And motherhood was... It's so beautiful. The experience is so beautiful, but also it was really hard. And I had postpartum depression. And I didn't know it for a long time. And it got to the point where I wasn't showering, wasn't eating, doing the bare minimum to take care of Bennett, like bare minimum. I still feel like if I take myself to that place, that I still have some guilt to let go of during that time. And it's hard to explain what that's like. It just, like, bricks were attached to me and I was not who I am. I mean,
how long did that go on?
For months. Hmm. Months when he was an infant. And one day Steve said, I got to give you an ultimatum. Like, either I take you to a hospital or you do something to get yourself moving, going. I don't know what that is for you, but I'm going to be here if you choose something and support you through it, or I'm literally dropping you off at a hospital. And
whoa.
Yeah, like, I don't know, but I also think that's like such an angelic thing.
Mm. What a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, for him.
Yeah. And so he goes, what about yoga? Like, you loved yoga. And at the time we were living two blocks from a studio, they were having this ridiculous sale, like $39 unlimited yoga for every month. Like, just sign up. And I was like, $39 in California? Like, yoga is like a minimum $100 a month, unlimited. And he's like, I'll walk you to yoga. Like, and he would walk, him and Bennett would walk me to yoga every day, make sure I was there. And like that time and what the practice did for me and all the teachers whose classes I was taking at that time, just, they didn't try to fix me. I didn't try to say, oh, it's okay. And I've never experienced that in my life because we go, oh, it's okay, don't cry. Oh, it's not that bad. These people have it worse. And at the time, the only person that knew was Steve. I didn't share it with anyone. I was super ashamed, so guilty and beside myself. But I let myself cry. I let myself feel. And moving my body literally felt like healing my body and my mind. And I think it was the first time in my life that I allowed myself to feel my emotions without other emotions attaching to it. So I had to let myself feel really sad, but not feel guilty about that sadness. Mm. And there was one teacher in particular, and he would openly talk about depression from time to time in his classes and share about his story. And I just really connected with it. And I go, wow, if he can talk about it in a vinyasa class, oh my God, like I want to help others to know that they're not alone. And really, it's not even about taking care of people. It's literally just being with people and holding space and go like, I got you. Like the breath, movement, feeling our emotions, it's like one of the best healing practices.
Mm. And then some level of support.
Mm-hmm. Know. Mm-hmm. No fixing.
No fix. And it's hard. Even especially with the people that we love the most, you know, we want to find the perfect formula.
Mm-hmm.
Like do this and you're good.
Yeah. You know? You'll be healed or you'll be.
Or this worked for me.
Yeah.
It will work for you.
Yeah.
Just that sentence, like everything's okay. Everything's okay. Mm-hmm. What if in that moment, no, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you saying that just minimizes everything mm-hmm. I feel, you mm-hmm. know?
Oh yeah. Well, the minimizing. Mm. We can do that to each other so easily. We don't think about it because our parents did that to us.
Yeah.
Ever since we were little.
I mean, like kids too. It's yeah. like, you know. Oh, don't you're okay.
Cry.
Don't cry. You just
don't
fell.
Cry.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm fine.
Well, and then they're like, swallowing the emotion yeah. or the true experience and expression for them. Mm. They're swallowing it.
Mm.
So then we learn to say, I'm fine.
Mm.
Even when we're not. Like, it's no wonder why we're all fucked up.
No, it starts really young.
Yeah.
But it's also, and we can see that with our parents too. Like, of course, we want our kids to be fine.
Yes.
You're fine. You're okay. Everything's okay, you know. And just sitting with the reality of sometimes it's not, you know.
And the kids can feel us.
Yeah.
When we say, you're fine. The energy of us.
We're not
like,
fine.
Oh my God, is her bone broken? Is his head okay? Like, they can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
They're very intuitive. Mm-hmm. And they know. On some level, they're saying I'm fine, but something else is telling me otherwise. And so they learn to turn off their intuition.
Hmm.
You know, we turn off our intuition because it's like incongruent what we're told versus what is being felt.
Hmm.
So even the
How do you practice that with Bennett?
Oh,
because now he's older. Yeah. And I mean, I'm navigating, trying to figure this out. How is that with him now?
I let him feel his emotions. Like at school, he'll say, I didn't get to sit next to my friend. Another kid wouldn't let me sit next to her, and it's his best friend. And he goes, I'm just really sad. I can't handle it. My heart just hurts.
He says that.
Yeah.
My heart just hurts.
I
get goosebumps now. Crying. I don't want his heart to hurt.
I know. So even he's 7, he's over 60 pounds. I'll sit him on my lap and I will just say, may I love on you. May I hold you. I know you're sad. I get sad too. I remember when I couldn't sit next to my friend. It made me really sad. Maybe you could sit next to her tomorrow. You know, and just not try to change it. And let him feel the cycle of the emotional response from that experience and give him his own time. And he does move through it. And he openly says, okay, like when he's ready.
And then he says, okay.
Yeah. And even when I'm really sad or angry or frustrated, he knows. And you go, Mama, may I love on you?
Oh, my heart.
I'm like, are you sure I'm your parent?
How did this happen?
Yeah. And I've really done that since he was little, like toddler age. And I told you about how he used to headbang. Mm. And when he couldn't formulate words or wasn't really talking yet at like 2, and how he would headbang against the wall, against the floor. And I was like, Steve, I think something is like mentally wrong with him. Like, I don't know. We should go take him to the doctor and get him all checked out, because I had never been around kids that did this headbanging. And then I just thought, wait, okay, we'll just keep an eye on it. And then I would just scoop him up, hold him really tight, and just rock him. I love you. I love you. I won't leave you. I'm right here. I hear you. And it's just, that's how we've dealt with emotions in our house. Hmm. Even with Steve and I. Like, it's gotten so good with...
And then, you know, you learn along the way with him, and then he teaches you back, and then you can put that on each other. I mean, it's the most beautiful cycle.
Stay 7. Don't ever lose this. Don't forget to be 7, like when you're 13 or 17 and you have a, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, whomever you like love at that time. Don't lose these. Hmm. Like, let it be. Don't forget to be 7.
Don't forget to be 7. It's the best.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you think, it's just a final question, do you think you would have been able to arrive at that sort of beautiful ability to hold emotion if it wasn't for your postpartum depression and everything that you went through then?
No, I would have swept those things under the rug or fixed, or just like my mom did and her mom did. My mom is from Germany. My grandmother, a whole side of my family is from Germany, so they're very stoic and cold, and nothing's wrong. And that's how they learned to go, oh, you're fine. It's not that big of a deal, or whatever it is. But to a 7-year-old, not able to sit next to his best friend at school is a big deal. That's his world right now. And it might not sound like a big deal to us, but if we make sure that, or if I make sure that, yes, that is a big deal in his life, like hopefully when the things get really, really big, like as he grows, I hope that he will always be able to share like his teenage angst or the 20-something like wild and out, go crazy, break all the rules. I hope that he feels safe, that his parents will always be there and not judge him or try to change him or fix him. And I think that because of my yoga practice and where I was practicing and with whom, it was, you know, when I was 29 years old, hearing the concept of self-love for the first time is like, what the fuck? I'm sorry. How come this isn't taught in school?
I'm 29. Why am I hearing about this right now?
I like feel gypped.
I mean, a little bit.
Yeah.
But isn't it beautiful how life will give us all the challenging experiences we need just when we become parents, or right before or around that time, so that it's like, here's a gift for you to learn something essential.
Yeah.
You know, and then when we're in that, we don't know at all. And then suddenly it's just, oh, okay, I'm able to hold this space right now because that happened to me and I had to learn that for myself.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that?
Life.
You know, life.
Yeah. Life happens right on time.
Right on time, yeah. Mm-hmm. So then with that also, we can release any guilt or anything that felt like, oh, shouldn't have been that way. It was that way.
Yeah.
I love you so
much. I love you. If the chair wasn't in between us, I'd be like reaching for you.
Oh, please bring him. Bring your boys next time you come. Yes. So that Steven can teach Dennis how to sew and make furniture and do all the crazy cool shit that he does.
Bathing suits. Let's get Dennis making you swimsuits now.
Oh my God, fat chance. Jesus. I asked him the other day, what was it? It was something so simple. I was like, it was like a light bulb or something. And he was like, no, we have to call someone. don't think he's going to be sewing me a bathing suit anytime soon. But
never say never.
Very true. But thanks for coming on the show. Thank you so much. Everyone wondering when we're going to do our next retreat. This for sure was not the last one. So we're going to plan and we'll let you know. And for right now, if you want to join Write Club or follow Steffi, you can take Steffi's classes online at 108.com or yogagirl.com. And you can find her on Instagram as Steffi Now. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and a huge thanks to my guest, Steffi Birch. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. You can find them all on yogagirl.com, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or anywhere you normally get your podcasts. Of course, don't forget to leave a review while you are there. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work, and thanks to my sponsors, Oatly and Bob's Red Mill. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I'll see you next week.